The barbershop formula. The quiet ascension of Ludovico Martelli. Florence, Italy. A small workshop tucked into the side street near Arno River. Late afternoon, the light coming through the window is like the color of old gold. That specific Florentine light that has been painting the same stone walls for six centuries. Glass bottles and a long wooden bench. Amber and cobalt blue. Clear-cut crystal. Each one labeled in fine Italian script. The air is thick with scent. Eucalyptus and bergamot and lemon peel, cedar shavings. The faint medicinal pull of menthol drifting from one of the bottles. A man stands at the bench. Sleeves rolled to the elbow. Ink on his fingers and a small pot of pale green cream cooling in front of him. Across the city in a barber shop on the Vade Cicello, that same cream, or one almost exactly like it, it's being warmed up between two hands, a barber's hands. He works the cream slowly between his palms until it just slightly softens. Until the body heat draws out the eucalyptus oil, until it loosens, and then it spreads and then comes alive. Then he applies it to the customer's face. The customer, a Florentine merchant, you know, mid-40s, here for his Saturday shave, he exhales. A small, involuntary sigh, cooling and clean and precise. His shoulders drop a quarter of an inch into the leather chair. His eyes close. For 2 minutes, somewhere between the warm towel and the first scrape of the straight razor, the man, he stops being a merchant, stops being a husband, stops being a citizen of a country between two world wars. He's just a man getting taken care of. The cream isn't flashy, it isn't revolutionary, at least on the surface. It's a smaller jar of pale green paste sitting on a wooden shelf in a barbershop in Florence. But what it does, what the man behind the workshop bench has spent his life trying to do, is something quieter and more important than revolution. Takes a routine and turns it into a ritual. It takes something men endured and makes it something that men look forward to. The man behind the bench isn't trying to change the world. He's trying to perfect a thing the world just rushes through. His name is Ludovico Martelli, and the small glass jar of cream cooling on his workbench is the seed of something that will outlast him by more than a century. It will outlast two world wars. It will outlast the lira and the rise of the euro. It will outlast the rise and fall of empires that tried to flatten Florence with bombs. It will pass from his hands to his son's hands to his grandson's hands to his great-granddaughter's hands. And the jester in the barbershop, two hands warming a small dab of cream before it touches a man's face. Well, it will repeat itself somewhere in the world every single second for the next 200 plus years. You're listening to the Mr. Hansen Podcast, the story of a quiet Italian who built an empire one jar at a time. The world before him. Now, to understand what Ludovico Martelli built, you have to understand what shaving was before he built it. Early 1900s Italy. Shaving wasn't a convenience. Shaving wasn't quick. Shaving literally was a craft. Most men didn't shave themselves, at least not properly, not with a straight razor. not at the edge of the jaw where the skin pulls thin and a wrong angle will cut you and draw blood. So they went to a barber, two times a week, sometimes three. In some towns, it was Saturday morning ritual older than the railroads built around them. Barbershops were everywhere, in every Italian city, every Italian village, every wide spot in the road from Sicily to the Alps. But here's the thing. The products, the creams and the soaps and the oils and the lotions, well, mostly inconsistent and harsh and unrefined. Most barbers just mixed their own. Some used soaps from local apothecaries. Others bought industrial bars from suppliers in Milan or Turin that just didn't do it. It left the skin red and tight for hours. You see, there was no standard, no formula a man could trust to work the same every single time. There wasn't really a ritual, at least one that wasn't scaled. A barber in Naples used one thing and a barber in Milan used something different. A barber in Florence used a third concoction his uncle had taught him. Something mixed in a cracked porcelain bowl on a corner shelf. Now, if a man traveled for business, for family, or for war, his shave changed every time he changed cities. Same razor on his face, but different soaps and different results. Different sting on the way home, and men just kind of endured shaving. They really didn't enjoy it. Their faces stung after a Saturday at the barbershop. Their cheeks would break out and their collars on their Sunday shirts rub raw against their irritated skin. This was the world that Ludovico Martelli stepped into. A world full of barbershops and a world full of weekly customers. A world full of a problem nobody had quite figured out how to solve. A world quietly waiting for the right small jar of cream. The boy from Florence. Ludovico Martelli wasn't born into wealth. He wasn't born into a great industrial dynasty in Italy. He was simply born into Florence. And being born into Florence in the late 1800s was its own kind of inheritance. You see, Florence was the cradle of the Renaissance, the city of Michelangelo or Brunelleschi or Leonardo, the city where craft was a religion older than the cathedrals. You walk these streets and you absorb something whether you wanted to or not. You absorb the idea that things should be well made. You absorb the idea that the small thing, the brush stroke, the carved corner, the joint in the wood, the line in the seam, well, it mattered just as much as a big one. You absorb the idea that a man's name on a piece of work was a covenant with the people who were going to use it. Ludovico grew up among glassblowers and leatherworkers and perfumers and apothecaries, among men who hand-mixed pomades in copper pots, among women who blended scents in their kitchens for the wealthy ladies of Oltarmo. You see, he wasn't chasing fame. He wasn't building for headlines. He was learning a trade, quietly and patiently, like every Florentine before him. And the trade he was drawn to, the one that would shape the next four generations of his family, was scent. The cosmetic, the grooming, the small bottles and jars of things men and women rubbed into their hair and their hands and their faces. He was learning to read what people wanted before they could even put it into their own words. The Workshop, 1908. Ludovico is a young man. He has saved and he has watched. He has worked for someone else long enough to know that what he wants is to be different. He opens a workshop in Florence. you know, quaint, a small one, a storefront with a back room, a simple wooden bench, a shelf of bottles, a door that opens to the cobblestone street. Above the door is his name, Ludovico Martelli, and that's it. He doesn't start with shaving cream, he doesn't start with Prorazzo. He starts with something much humbler than that. You see, he starts as a distributor. He imports foreign perfumery products into Italy. Fine soaps from France, cologne from Germany, hair tonics from England, bottles of lavender water and bay rum and rose water that wealthy Italians had to send away for pay through the nose for at exclusive Milanese department stores. Ludovico opens a different door. He brings them in and he distributes them. He builds relationships with shopkeepers and pharmacists and barbers and salon owners, with hotel concierge. He drives by horse and cart, by early automobile, eventually by train, across regions of Italy that other distributors haven't even tried to reach. Tuscany and Umbria and Lazio. Eventually Lombardy and Veneto and down south into Naples and Calabria. He's a Florentine. His handshake is good. His prices are fair and his samples always arrive on time. Within years, he's built something most distributors never actually build. Simply a network. A web of trusted relationships across every region of Italy. Manufacturers who actually answer his calls and distributors who keep his stock. Shopkeepers who reorder without even being asked. Now, he doesn't know it yet, but the network is the soil, and the seed will be planted in 40 years from now. The distributor's education. The years between 1908 and 1930 are quiet years for Ludovico publicly, but they are loud years inside his own head, because every day he is learning. He is learning what shopkeepers reorder and what they don't. He is learning what scents Italian men actually buy versus what scents the magazines are trying to tell them to buy. He is learning which French soaps work in Italian water and which ones just turn to slime. He's learning what a barber in Bologna asks for when his current shaving cream stings his customer's face too much. He is learning what a pharmacist in Genoa wants in a hair tonic that won't go rancid in a humid coastal summer. He is learning the difference between a product that sells once and products that sell forever. He's learning the gestures, the way a barber in Verona warms a soap puck before even lathering it, the way a barber in Palermo dilutes his shaving cream with hot water from a copper pot, the way a barber in Trieste, just a few miles from the Austrian border, mixes a German tonic into a French aftershave because neither one alone does what his customers want. Now, a lot of this is not facts you can read in a book. These are facts you can only collect by being there. This is the education that no business school could ever give him. It's the education only the road gives a man. 1,000 conversations with 1,000 shopkeepers across 1,000 miles of Italian roads. And the more he learns, the more a thought begins to grow inside him. Now, these foreign products are good. Some of them are even very good. But none of them are made for Italian men and Italian skin with Italian water. Or the Italian beards, the Italian humidity, Italian preferences for what they want to smell like. You see, there's a gap, the same kind of gap 100 founders before and after him would notice in 100 different industries. A gap that no one else can quite see, because everybody else is already used to using what's broken. The quiet dream. By the 1920s, Ludovico Martelli is no longer a small distributor. He's one of the most respected names in Italian cosmetics distribution. But he wants more. Because he doesn't want more in the way that most successful distributors want more. He doesn't want a bigger fleet of trucks. He doesn't want a corner office in Milan. He doesn't want to be the largest distributor in Italy. You see, he prefers something simpler. He wants to make his own. He wants to take that wooden bench at the back of his Florentine workshop, the one stacked with foreign bottles he spent two decades selling, and he wants to put his own name on it. He wants the label above the door, Ludovico Martelli, to also be the label on the jar. This is the dream that he carries quietly through the 20s, through the rise of Mussolini, through Italy's slow march toward another war, through the years when most ambitious men were either making themselves loud for the regime or making themselves invisible from it. And Ludovico, he does neither. He keeps the workshop running. He keeps the network just humming. He keeps the bottles moving in and out of his back room. And he waits for the moment to finally make his own. The son who carried it. The early 1930s, Ludovico's son, Piero, comes of age. Piero is everything his father is, careful and quiet, observant to a fault, and a little something that his father isn't. You see, Piero is restless. Where Ludovico has spent two decades building a distribution business by trading on relationships and his firm reputation, Piero looked back at the workshop and saw a laboratory waiting to be built. He didn't want to keep moving someone else's bottles forever. He wanted to fill them. By the early 30s, with his father's blessing, Piero takes over the day-to-day running of the company. This is the moment the dream starts moving. Father and son, the founder and the heir, quietly begin building what Ludovico has been carrying in his head for 20 years. A laboratory in the back of the workshop where a small staff in white coats can mix and test and refine and pour and label. Where the Martelli name can finally go on a jar instead of just on a delivery slip. The first product they launch is a beauty cream. They call it Frabella. It's a women's skincare line, soft and floral and refined, aimed at the Italian middle-class woman who wanted a touch of Florentine craft without paying the Parisian prices. And it works. Frabella becomes a well-liked, well-rounded skincare line across Italy's in the 1930s. And in doing so, it teaches the Martellis something profound. It teaches them that they can make their own. It teaches them that the network Ludovico spent 20 years building can move a Martelli jar just as efficiently as it ever moved a French one. It teaches them the old man's quiet dream wasn't a dream at all. It was actually a plan. The wait. Then the world stops. 1939, 1940, 1941, war. Italy under fascism. Italy at war. Italy consistently bombed by Allies. Italy occupied by Germans. Italy rising in partisan resistance in the Apennines. Italy starving and Italy mourning. Italy waiting just for the war to end. Florence even itself is bombed. The old bridges across the Arno. Except the Ponte Vecchio. are blown up by retreating Germans and forces in 1944. The Martelli workshop survives. The laboratory survives. The bench, the bottles, the notes, the formulas, they all survive. Because quietly, the Martellis just kept working through everything. By 1945, when the dust settles and the Allies sweep north and Italy emerges from the wreckage of fascism, the Martelli Company, astoundingly, is still standing. Older, lean, a little battered, but it's still standing. And standing, that actually means something in post-war Italy. Standing actually means that you now have a head start. Standing means when the American Marshall Plan dollars start pouring into Western Europe to fund the rebuild, when Italian factories start humming again, when Italians' income starts climbing, when Italians start spending money on small luxuries for the first time in a generation, well, you're already there. You see, you already have the workshop. You already have the laboratory. You already have the network and the dream. All you need now is the right product. The lab in post-war Italy, 1948. A small Florentine laboratory. Wooden bench, glass beakers, copper mixing pots, the smell of eucalyptus oil drifting through a high window. Piero Martelli stands at the bench. He's in his prime now, late 30s, running the company day to day. His father, Ludovico, is there too, older and quieter, watching the man his son has become. Yeah, they're working on a problem. The problem his father identified 40 years ago on 1,000 dusty roads and 1,000 barbershops in conversations he had across Italy. You see, Italian men, they don't enjoy shaving. They just simply tolerate it. They endure it. Their face stings and their skin breaks out. Their barbers do their best with whatever soap is on the shelf, but the soap was never designed for what they were trying to do. Piero believes, and his father believes, that somehow there is a different way. A cream, not a soap, a cream. Applied before the lather. Designed to actually soften the beard and open the follicle and cool the skin. Prepare the face for the razor instead of just fighting it. A pre-shave cream. And it doesn't even exist yet. Not the way they're imagining it. So they simply build it. Eucalyptus oil drawn from the trees growing in the Italian south. Why? Well, for bracing, for medicinal coolness. Menthol for the freshness, for the subtle numbing of the skin. For the sensation that turns shaving into a ritual when it used to be a chore. A base of vegetable oils and glycerin and careful emulsifiers. A formula that they refine over and over and over for months. They test it on themselves and they test it on their employees. They test on a small circle of trusted Florentine barbers willing to try it as willing customers. Adjust, refine, and then adjust again. When they finally settle on the formula, they pour it into small jars. A pale green paste, cool to the touch, sharp with eucalyptus. The first time Piero hands a finished jar across the bench to his father, the old man, who is now in his 60s, opens it, smells it, and closes his eyes for a moment. He doesn't say much, he never did. Florentines don't say much when something actually matters. He just looked determined and nodded. 40 years. the dream he had been carrying since 1908, sitting in a small jar on the bench in front of him. And they simply gave it a name, Prorazzo. It's a contraction of two Italian words, pro and racer, crochet, or for shaving, the simplest possible name for the simplest possible promise. The Miracle Cream. The Prorazzo pre-shave cream doesn't launch with fanfare. It doesn't launch with a national campaign. It doesn't launch with celebrity endorsements. It just simply launches the way every great Italian product launches. Through the hands of the people. The Martellis send their employees out into the streets of Florence with small jars of the cream. They walk into barber shops and they introduce themselves and they explain and they demonstrate. Hey, watch this. Warm a small dab between your hands and apply it before the lather. Tell me what the customer says. The barbers, skeptical and professional, the kind of men who have heard 100 sales pitches and rejected 99 of them, well, they simply try it. They warm it between their hands and then apply it. They watch what happens. They watch the customer in the chair as they exhale. A small involuntary sigh. Cooling and clean and precise. The skin softens and the beard stands up. The razor gliding where it used to drag. The customer leaves the chair without burn. Without the redness. Without the irritation that he just accepted as the price of being a clean-shaven man for 40 years. And he comes back the next week and brings his brother. He tells his coworker about the cream the barber used. Then the barber reorders it. And that's it. That is the entire marketing strategy. A cream so good that men who used it and the men who watched it being used simply couldn't stop talking about it. Soon, within a year and then two and then five, the small jars of Prorazzo pre-shaped cream are sitting on barbershop shelves all over Italy. Not because of advertising, because of the barbers. The Italian press starts calling it Cream Miracolosa, the miracle cream. The nickname will stick with it for the next 75 years. The barbershop strategy. Here's where Ludovico Martelli's strategy reveals itself in full. Most companies, when they have a product like Prorazzo, would have rushed to mass retail. Pharmacy shelves and grocery shelves, department stores and newspaper ads, national billboards. The fastest possible path to the largest possible audience. Ludovico didn't. Piero didn't either. They went to the barbers first. Only the barbers. 4 years. Now, this wasn't an accident. This was a strategy that came from 40 years of distribution wisdom. Ludovico had spent his entire adult life learning one truth. The gatekeeper of the experience matters more than the customer. If a barber trusts his product, his customer will also trust it. If a barber recommends a product, his customer will buy it. If a barber uses a product for 10,000 shaves over 30 years, his customer doesn't even ask for the name. He just absorbs it, becomes loyal to it, defends it when his nephew suggests trying something new. The barber is the gatekeeper. The barber is the church. You don't market past the priest. You earn the priest. Think about what that takes. It takes patience and it takes unusual humility. It takes the willingness to walk into 100 small shops in 100 small towns, hat in hand and humble, and say, "Try this. Tell me what your customers think. Tell me how it could be better." It takes discipline to keep your prices fair when other companies would have simply raised them. It takes the discipline to keep the formula consistent when other companies would have cheapened it. It takes the discipline to keep showing up year after year and decade after decade, long after the early excitement has faded and the only thing that remains is the daily reorder slips. So the Martellis went to the barbers, and only the barbers. And they stayed there for decades. Even as Proraso grew, even as it spread region by region, even as Italian housewives began asking pharmacists to stock it for their husband, the Martellis stayed loyal to the gatekeeper, and the gatekeepers stayed loyal to them. That's a covenant most modern brands wouldn't have the patience for. But this was a Florentine family, and Florentines invented the long view. The slow burn. While other brands chased trends in the 50s and 60s, chrome packaging and aerosol cans, celebrity faces and slick magazine spreads, Proraso stayed consistent. Same eucalyptus, same menthol, same pale green paste. Same small jars and tubes lined up on the same workshop benches in Florence. When the Italian economic boom of the late 40s and 50s, fueled by the Marshall Plan dollars and a national appetite for small pleasures during peacetime, when it started lifting incomes across the country, well, Proraso was already there. When Italian men, suddenly able to afford a small daily luxury, started stocking their bathrooms with the same products they encountered at the barbershops, Proraso was already there. When the company expanded the line to include a shaving cream and then an aftershave, then a cologne-like splash, then a more sensitive formula for delicate skin, every product extended the original promise. Same workshop, same scent profiles, same trust. The brand grew not in spikes, but in steady decade after decade compounding. There were no viral moments. There were no overnight cultural takeovers. There was just the slow, relentless work of building a covenant with millions of men who shaved every morning and only wanted one thing from the cream they used: that it would do exactly today what it did yesterday, and that it would do exactly tomorrow what it did today. Simply, in the simplest terms, reliability. And that's what Proraso sold. That's what the Martellis perfected. In a century when 10,000 other grooming brands launched, peaked, faded, and then just simply disappeared, Proraso just kept making cream. And the men of Italy, and eventually the men of the world, kept buying it. Gino and the Italian flag. In the 1950s, Proraso introduced something almost everyone in Italy still recognizes: a man named Gino. Not a real man, an illustration. A square-jawed, smiling Italian gentleman with neatly combed dark hair drawn in the clean, optimistic style of post-war Italian design. See, Gino became the Proraso spokesman. His face on the packaging, his face on the promotional posters, his face on the small fold-out displays sitting on every Italian barber's counter. Gino was, shall we say, the everyman, the shopkeeper and the mechanic and the schoolteacher, the shoemaker. Not a movie star and not an aristocrat. the man your father was, or the man that you wanted to be, or the man you saw waiting for the train at Santa Maria Novella station every Tuesday morning. Gino is still on the Prorazzo packaging today. Now, around the same time, the Martellis introduced something else that revealed exactly who they were as a company. Three product lines, each one designed for a different kind of skin and a different kind of beard. Green, white, red. The colors of the Italian flag. This wasn't a marketing flourish. This was a quiet declaration of identity. We are not a French brand pretending to be Italian. We are not a German brand pretending to be Italian. We are Italian. Made in Florence. Carried by the Italian network Ludovico spent 20 years building. Used by Italian barbers who worship Italian craft. The flag colors weren't on the box for marketing. They were on the box because they belonged there. You wrap yourself in your own flag when you actually mean it. The grandson who bore the name. 1968. Italy is in upheaval. Students in the streets and workers on strike. The whole continent shivering with the political tremors of that famous, famous year in Florence. On a quieter street, a quieter handover takes place. Piero Martelli, the son who built Prorazzo, the man who invented the Crema Miracolosa, the man who took his father's distribution empire and turned it into a manufacturing one. He simply steps back. He hands the company to his son. His son who is 24 years old and whose name is Ludovico. Ludovico Martelli II, named for the grandfather who started everything in that small Florentine workshop 60 years ago. The same name on the same building above the same door. Three generations, 60 years, one family. Ludovico, the grandson, is 24, almost exactly the age his great namesake had been when he opened the workshop in 1908. Almost exactly the age his father, Piero, had been when the family launched Frabella in the early 30s. You see, there's a pattern in this family. 24 seems to be the age at which the next generation finally get the keys. Ludovico, the grandson, grows the company, but grows it carefully. He doesn't tear up his father's formulas. He doesn't repackage Gino. He doesn't replace eucalyptus with synthetic mint. He consolidates and he extends. And then he guards. When the Italian retail market shifts in the 70s and 80s, when the great multinational brands like L'Oreal and Unilever and Procter & Gamble pour into Italy with their massive advertising budgets and their global supply chains, Prorazzo doesn't even flinch. The customer base is too loyal. The barbers are too loyal. The brand is too rooted. Prorazzo doesn't compete with the giants by becoming a giant. It competes by being something that they can just simply never be. A Florentine workshop run by a family. A family whose grandfather used to pour cream into glass jars by hand on the same bench in 1948. In 1990, Ludovico moves the headquarters to Fiesole, a small hilltop town just outside Florence with views over the whole Arno Valley. The bench moves and the bottles move and the formula moves. But the spirit doesn't. The spirit is still on that 1908 wooden workbench with a young Florentine man rolling up his sleeves and reaching for a glass beaker. The fourth generation. Today, the company is run by the fourth generation. Stefania Martelli, a great-granddaughter of the founder, now sits as chair and president. Her father is Ludovico II, the grandson. Her great-grandfather, Ludovico I, started the workshop in 1908. That's a single line of one Italian family stewarding the same enterprise across 117 years. 117 years. Through two world wars, through fascism, through the partisan resistance, through the bombing of Florence's bridges, through the Marshall Plan reconstruction, through the Italian economic miracle, through the rise and dominance of the multinational giants, through the digital revolution, through the fall of European borders and the rise of global e-commerce, through every imaginable shift in how products are made, sold, and consumed. And this small jar of pale green cream is still on the bench. Stefania has expanded, but carefully. The company today owns 13 brands, including Marvis, the Italian toothpaste with almost a cult following, and Valabra, the historic genuine soap brand that was founded in 1903. And Floyd, the iconic Italian aftershave. But Proraza remains the heart. The eucalyptus and menthol formula, with minor, very minor refinements over the decades, is still essentially the same cream Piero perfected in the post-war Florentine laboratory in 1948. The barbers are still their priority. Stefania says it openly. The barbershops are our training ground. We listen to the barbers. We discuss with the barbers. We make what helps them do their work better. The covenant from 1948 still holds true in 2026. That's not a marketing position. That's simply Proraza discipline. The discipline beneath the brand. So here's the reframe. Most people think Proraza sells cream. Most people think Proraza sells a tube of pale green paste with eucalyptus and menthol. But that's the surface. That's really not the product. The product is what happens when a barber warms a small dab of that cream between his hands and applies it to the face of a tired man at the end of a long week. The exhale and the drop of the shoulders. The brief, almost imperceptible easing of a man who has been carrying something all week and gets to set it down for a couple minutes in a leather chair while a professional takes care of him. That's the product, the feeling. The cream is just the delivery system. Modern brands today forget this. They optimize the delivery system. They tweak the packaging. They reformulate for shelf differentiation. They chase the trends. And the Martellis didn't. The Martellis remembered that the product was the exhale. You can't optimize the exhale by tweaking the packaging. You can only optimize it by making the cream so trustworthy, so consistent, so reliable and present that it disappears into the ritual. That's what Ludovico Martelli understood. That's what his son refined. That's what his grandson protected. And that's what his great-granddaughter still guards. A jar of cream that has earned the right to disappear into a man's morning. There aren't many products in the world that have even came close to earning that. There's a reason that this one has lasted for four generations. Because the discipline isn't sexy. The discipline is showing up the same way every day for over 100 years. The discipline is refusing to chase the trend that would dilute the trust. The discipline is keeping the eucalyptus where it belongs, even when the synthetic substitute would save you 15% on cost. The difference is the discipline keeping Geno on the package even when marketing consultants tell you, well, Geno's dated. The discipline is staying in Florence, staying in Fiesole, staying in the same bench-driven family rhythm, even when consolidation specialists offer to buy you out and move you to Milan or Geneva or even New York. The Martellis kept the discipline. Four generations. It wasn't built for the market. It was built for the man in the chair. Now the rest of the story. Step back. Picture it again. The small workshop in Florence, 1908. A young man named Ludovico Martelli, rolling up his sleeves at a wooden bench. Glass bottles of imported perfumery lined up behind him. A door that opens to a cobblestone street. He doesn't know. He doesn't know that the network he is about to spend 20 years building will become the soil his son's invention takes root in 40 years from now. He doesn't know that his son Piero will create a pale green pre-shave cream in 1948 and that the Italian press will call it a miracle. He doesn't know that his grandson, named for him, will inherit the company at 24 and steward it through the rise of the multinationals. He doesn't know that his great-granddaughter will sit one day as the chair and president of a 13-brand Italian beauty company headquartered in Fiesole in the hills above the Arno. He doesn't know that more than 100 years after he opened his door, his name will still be above another door on another building where men and women in white coats still pour cream into jars. He doesn't know that a barber in Tokyo will warm a small dab of that cream between his hands tomorrow morning. That a barber in Buenos Aires will do the same. That a barber in Brooklyn will do the same. That a barber in Berlin will do the same. That somewhere in the world, every second of every day, a customer will exhale into a chair as the eucalyptus and menthol settle on his skin. And the man that's causing that exhale, though he died generations ago, was an Italian man named Ludovico Martelli, who decided in 1908 that the world deserved a better small jar of cream. And this is what most people don't understand about these empires. They picture the loud ones, the disruptors and the revolutionaries, the men who burst into a market and somehow break it. But the longest-lasting empires are never built like that. The longest-lasting empires are built quietly by men who aren't trying to change the world. By men who are trying to perfect a thing that the world just seems to rush through. A Florentine workshop didn't produce a revolution. It simply produced a standard. The way of doing something ordinary and extraordinarily well. The shaving market today is worth tens of billions of dollars. Multinational corporations spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year fighting just for shelf space. New brands launch every month and disappear by next Christmas. And on a small bench in Fiesole, just outside of Florence, a pale green cream still cools, still gets poured into small jars, still gets shipped to barbershops, still gets warmed between the two hands. Still meets a man's face at the end of a long work week. And it still draws the exhale. The same gesture, same cream, different hands, over a century later. If you've got something quiet that you've been refining, don't underestimate it. Don't move past it. Don't trade it for something louder just because the market seems to reward louder. Refine it and stand by it. Let the right people find it. Build the network, Earn the gatekeeper. Trust the slow burn. Because somewhere in Florence, a man did exactly that. He built an empire by being consistent. He built an empire by understanding something that most people overlook. The smallest improvements in the most common routines quietly shape the world. My name is Mr. Hansen, and now you know the rest of the story. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to this. I wanted to do this because I personally have used Prorazzo for going on a year now. I will never, ever get out of it. I absolutely love the stuff, and I love hearing the underdog and these stories that we don't hear from other places. If you'd like to hear more stories like this, go to MrHansenPodcast.com. That's MrHansenPodcast.com, or subscribe to where you like to listen to most. Until next time.
Mr. Hanson got the mic tonight. Say, come closer, I got a tale of Ludovic's, your Martelli, and a business that would not fail. Born in a room with rough brick walls and a barber's bowl of foam, he learned to mix that honest cream like he was carving bone. Story begin. He started with a stubborn dream and a table full of tins. Then boots marched past the window glass and the hard years caved them in. But the sons kept mixing daylight in the same old family room while grandsons learned secret shape of lather in the spoon. Bread was thin in winter, shadows on the street. Still that little green promise kept its steady beat. Four generations still roll on. Four generations. Generations still roll on. Prorazzo in the old green tin. Prorazzo, let the story begin. Still roll on. Prorazzo in the old green tin. Prorazzo, let the story begin. Mr. Hanson said, listen, a name can outlive pain. If you keep the same good hands, it comes back clean again. From Ludovic Show's old first spark to the boys who carried on, the river kept its green, green course, and the hard days moved along. Four generations still roll on. Four generations. Let the story begin.
mystery breathe in the palm of your hand. Mr. Handsome told that midnight truth about one small brave clan.